Thank you for coming again to my, this is my last presentation. Tomorrow will be the film on wolves, which I think you'd enjoy, because the very first wolf pack, the Lookout Pack, that was identified as the first wolf pack to establish in Washington, the film followed, the film's about them. So it would be, but I'll warn you, it is 2 hours long, so we're starting at 8 and we'll go till 10. And then the other thing is, I just noticed this is the brand new National Geographic, and there's a short 2-page article on the wolves of the Arctic. And it was interesting because this wolf pack, they're in the Arctic and they hunt caribou, and caribou migrate like 1,000 miles. And this wolf pack was on a hunt of a caribou herd that went 65 miles over 2 days. I thought that was pretty neat. Tonight is Wolverines.
Yes.
So I'm in appreciation of my favorite Mustelet, and being that it's my last lecture, I wore my best shirt. That's a good story. So the Wolverine is in a family called Mustelids, and their Mustelid means that they have like a musk gland, or they have glands on their stomach that they mark their territories with, and it's a musky smell. So all these animals are Mustelids: fishers, mink, weasels, skunks, pine martens, otters, badgers, and ferrets. And as always, if you have any questions, go ahead and stop me or just yell out. I'm going to cover a little bit of the natural history of wolverines, talk about its distribution, like I did with the other species. I'll spend some time about current research that's going on, and then finish up with wolverine conservation. So just like the bears, the cougars, and the wolves, the wolverine has been portrayed as a vicious animal, and it attacks everything, and it's a threat to every creature around it. The wolverine is a tough guy. He is, and I'll talk about that. They're very strong. A normal wolverine has been known to kill like large deer. So they're not. It's not like they're not bashful. This dark color is wolverine habitat. So they're what we call circumboreal. They live in cold northern latitudes, and as I'll talk about a little bit, their distribution and survival is based a lot on snow cover, which is another reason I like them so much, because I love the snow.
Did they never make it? Was that the island of Iceland that they never made?
Greenland. You mean
Greenland? That big island. Sorry.
Right there?
Is that I wonder why they didn't make it there.
That's a good question. That is a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, the scientific name is Gulo Gulo. And I was told in Latin it means glutton. Wait, somebody's studying Latin.
Mary. I haven't gotten to that chapter.
I love your answer.
All right, so I have a couple slides on this. A friend of mine went to Mongolia to study wolverines, and I just threw in a couple slides. If you're going to study wolverines, you better like the winter, because this is how they slept out in the middle of Mongolia in the winter. This is where they slept and spent the night, and this is how they traveled. And so you need to like the wolf, you need to like the winter. They were in Mongolia for 24 days, and they never saw a wolverine, but they did see plenty of wolverine tracks. And here's a really good wolverine track. I'll talk a little bit more about it, but it's as big as a wolf or a lynx track. It's very big. There'll be five toes and some claws. One thing my friend found when he went to Mongolia, he found out that they had camels there. And this is a Bactrian camel in Mongolia. And down here you can read a little bit about them. Apparently, when they're in dire straits, they'll actually eat them. I thought they were cool looking animals, that's why I put the picture in.
Can you go back two pictures?
Two?
Yeah. No, one. What's he holding in his hand?
The wolverine scat. Poop.
Oh.
That's, if you're going to be a wildlife biologist, you got to get used to holding and smelling and dissecting bear poop.
Is that similar to what Pine Marten scat looks like?
That is. That is very similar to Pine Marten. Pine Marten scat is long and tapered at both ends. It'll taper down at both ends.
Okay.
But yeah, that looks like, yeah, it's close. And it's about the same size. Pine Marten might be a little bit smaller. You know, I mentioned it's a mustelid. They can go up to about 45 pounds. I consider them walking tanks. They are so tough. Look at the claws on that guy. And they're so low to the ground. They have a low center of gravity. I just think they're amazing animals. So they're the largest member of the weasel family. You can tell individual wolverines by the chest and throat marks. And I have lots of pictures I'll show you. They have just like very distinctive marks. So you can identify the individual wolverines. The males are bigger than the females. There's another wolverine track.
And the tracks, the hind foot is in front of the forefoot.
Maybe. I don't know for sure. I never pay attention to hind or rear foot. If you're going to do some serious tracking, there's some good books on tracking and where the hind foot goes in front. I don't know.
Okay.
They do travel quite a, the males can travel up to 25 miles in a day. They are territorial. And like the cougars, the male will have a big territory and will overlap with several females. So in this picture, this is the male. And this is a female, that's a female, and that's a female. The females avoid each other if they can, so the male will overlap with these females. Now, the male will, although he doesn't participate in raising the young a lot, he does hang around a natal den, and he sometimes travels with the kids. But I wouldn't say they're not intensely involved with the kids like a wolf would be, like in a wolf family. I think I talk more about reproduction a little bit later. This is an actual wolverine in Eagles Peak, which is just south of here. This is almost vertical couloir in Glacier National Park that a particular male wolverine traveled up and down regularly. This is impressive. I mean, it's like this. So that kind of gives you the idea of why they're considered like walking. I call them walking tanks. So they're scavengers. They mostly eat like deer and elk, like that a wolf kills, or a deer and elk that's been killed by in an avalanche. They also eat mice, squirrels, marmot, grouse, small mammals, and they don't have a big effect though on their prey species like a cougar does, or a wolf, or a bear. And there's rarely any conflicts with humans because where the wolverines live, they're so remote and so far back and deep snow, not many people go back there. They have a really powerful jaw, and they actually have. I'll need to get a better slide, but in the very last molar, this molar, when it meets the bottom molar in the back, they meet kind of side by side, so. If there's a piece of meat here, the top molar comes down and it's like a meat slicer. It just does this and it just cuts. It's very, very powerful. Pine marten also have that characteristic. Breeding and denning, the females mature at around 2 years old, and they don't give birth until they're three or four. They breed every other year. All the dens, so the wolverines need snow cover because they go into a winter den. They don't hibernate. They're active all year round, but they need deep snow cover for their birthing dens and then their maternal dens, which they move to after they've given birth. The young wolverines are born and they're white. They're as white as this screen, and that slowly fades away. I don't know if I actually put it on the slide anywhere, but the wolverines also have delayed implantation of embryos. So they, even though they breed in the summer, they breed in June, July, August, they'll breed. The embryo will not implant, just like a grizzly bear, unless the female has enough body fat to actually raise the kids. This is a wolverine sticking its head out of a natal den, and this is one of the researchers standing on top of the den. And I'll show you pictures of in the summer, and you'll be able to see what it looks like under here. What's underneath there is a bunch of jumbled logs or boulders. So there's natural, once the snow piles up, there's natural little hollows to move around in. This is probably 10 feet of snow where he's standing. A little bit more about the reproduction. So they May to August. I already talked about delayed implantations. This is kind of interesting, the study in Glacier, just like a grizzly bear, that it's pretty tough, the mortality rate. Half of the female, you know, if the normal birthing of two to three kids, half of those are dead, probably by the end of the first year.
What's the primary cause of mortality?
Good question. That's a good question. They are preyed upon by, so cougars and bears will attack wolverines. You know, I don't know for sure. I'm going to say that it's predation and just injury, accidental. I mean, because when they go out and they're hunting, they can get injured and hurt. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure. That's a good question. I need to figure that. I need to find out. Good question. This is just a young, probably about a year old kit. A little bit about the prints. Generally five-toed. Sometimes you don't see the fifth toe. It's too small, so it'll disappear. What's interesting is there's a space between the first toe and the last toe. So they call this the 1-3-1 spacing. So you see that space there. So there's one toe, three, and then another space. They have kind of a gait that's similar to a pine marten, where it's two front and back, the toes right side by side. That's a wolverine track on some very firm snow. After a fresh snow, it's going to be a big indentation. So because they're so large, the only thing you can confuse a wolverine track with would be either a wolf, a lynx, a cougar, or a bear. That's how big the wolverine's foot is.
That's amazing, because the wolverine is.
I'm going to move on and talk about the distribution, historic distribution. There's some really interesting things about wolverines. So it turns out, until they actually started doing some serious research in the last 3 or 4 years, there were a lot of variations in what people were claiming were historic habitats, the historic distribution of wolverines in the U.S. So you can see how different this distribution map is from that one or that one. There was a lot of variation. And we didn't really know what was correct. So historically, these are actually in the most recent study, these are historic areas where wolverine were trapped, or they know that there were definitely wolverine up until about 1960. Move on to the next slide. So what they find out that it wasn't there isn't a vegetation or habitat type that'll describe wolverine distribution, but it's most the primary factor is cold climates, snow cover, and adequate food. And it's real important that there's snow cover all the way into May, because that's when the kids that they start traveling and moving with the mother. This is a map. This is a map of snow cover that persists until mid-May. So you can see the Sierras, Oregon Cascades, Washington Cascades, the Northern Rockies. And this is where, based on the studies, you would expect to find wolverines. Of course, up here in Canada also. And we're going to look specifically on what happens in this area. On the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest, the dark red is persistent snow cover. This is Mount Rainier. Here's Lake Chelan. And you can see all the area around Holden, all the way up to Canada. This is really good. There's really good snow cover. Hence, it's going to be really good. It's going to be really good wolverine habitat. And then the yellow is potentially persistent snow cover all the way into May. And it's actually quite lower. Basically, what it means is this area is great for wolverines. This is wolverine habitat in the summer. So after we looked at the historical records of wolverines up until about 1900, then we looked at recent, has there been any current wolverine data? And look what happens. So there are the last known most recent wolverine track or pelt in California that was known was 1922. The last known wolverine pelt or track in Utah was 1921, Colorado 1919. And there actually are, there historically were wolverines around the Great Lakes, but between in this period 1995 to 2005, there's been no recorded wolverines. So keep that in mind, specifically the California wolverines, it's really interesting. So what happened to the Sierra Mountains wolverines? Well, the wolverines have a low reproductive rate. They also have high mortality rates, and that was due to hunting, trapping. Unfortunately, if you're a trapper and you're trapping pine marten, you also can get wolverine in your trap. And then if you're a trapper, the pine marten pelt is much more valuable than a wolverine pelt. So traditionally, a pine marten trapper, if he knew that a wolverine was in his area or affecting his traps that he was using to catch pine marten, the first thing they wanted to do is get rid of that wolverine. So all this is that's the speculation on what happened to the California wolverines. By the mid-1900s, so by 1930, the population in the Sierra Nevadas was determined to be extinct. We think, there is no record after 1930, 1922 of any wolverine. So, and this will make more sense when I talk about, okay, so here's the interesting part. So the scientists took samples of hair and teeth from wolverines that were kept, for example, in the Smithsonian Institute or at museums in California. So they took samples of these, from all these known records of wolverines, sent them off for DNA analysis, and they came back and found out that, from in this period, the samples from 1870 to 1922, so the wolverines that were sampled in that date, this is the haplotype or the genetic markers of the wolverines in this time period. But the more recent, then they sampled the more recent samples of wolverines, and there, of course, there were none for California in later years. And what they found out was, there are the haplotype or genetic makeup of the California Sierra Nevada wolverines doesn't appear in any of the modern current wolverine population. So these guys, this haplotype, this genetic wolverine is gone. It's extinct. And so these guys are gone. And by 1930, this population went extinct. And the theory is because they were only in the Sierra Nevada mountains, the theory is that they eventually lost any connection. There was no connection over to the Rocky Mountains or even north into Oregon and Washington. So we have lost this species or that genetic makeup of that wolverine. So these guys are gone. You can see that this genetic makeup now has taken over most of the northern Rockies. And this genetic makeup is very similar to the Canadian wolverine. And currently, we found out that, look, there's a new haplotype, a new haplotype existing now that didn't exist. It didn't exist back prior to 1930. And so where are these wolverines coming from? Well, let's go back to the snow cover map and look at this snow cover map. And the theory is that this haplotype C is the coastal Canadian wolverine genetic makeup. And this haplotype A is the Alberta, Northern Rockies, Canada haplotype. And what this means is that the population now of wolverines that we have now in Washington, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, they're being reestablished from Canada. We almost nearly pretty much wiped out what was historically here as far as back in the 1920s and 1800s. And this is the connection now that's reestablishing wolverines in the U.S. By the way, the estimated population of wolverines in the lower 48 in the United States is 250 to 300 individuals. That's the estimated total population. All right, so enough about the genetics. So I'm going to talk now about current wolverine research. So starting in 2006, there was a lot of interest in finding out what the current population of wolverines are. So one of the study areas is right here in the North Cascades. Of course, there's Winthrop. This is Lake Chelan. This is an actual photo of one of the study areas. This is actually up by north of here in the Winthrop area. One of the problems with studying wolverines here in the North Cascades is there's no access to the interior of the North Cascades in the winter. So that's why these are actual trap sites, and unfortunately they're close to the nearest road. So if you catch a wolverine, you have to get in there right away and collar it. You can't leave it in a trap very long because it'll with no food in the cold nights. That's why it's kind of important in Holden if you guys could become part of the research, because you're here and you're here and you're like as far in as you can get to the North Cascades. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. So anyways, these are some of the trapping sites. So how do you catch a wolverine?
Whoa.
So what you do is you have to build this bomb-proof log cabin, because believe me, a pissed off wolverine can dig it and chew his way out of almost anything. we used a satellite transmitter, and this transmitter, when a wolverine went in and that trap door went down, the transmitter would set off a signal to the biologist that there was a wolverine. And as soon as that went off, the researchers had to gather their gear at whatever, wherever they were, and shoot off to go come to the trap and radio call or the wolverine. The traps were baited with, you know, roadkill deer carcasses. This is actual, there's a wolverine in here. And so you, to knock the wolverine out, you had to use a pole with a syringe on the end. Because, I mean, no one in his right mind is going to stick his hand into that trap and knock the wolverine out. Which, by the way, maybe if we have time at the end of the lecture, I'll tell you about my pine marten story of capturing a pine marten. And we had to knock them out and put radio collars on. And I had I have a story about a pine marten that got away, and it could have been very bad for me. But anyways, if we have time, I'll tell you the story. So here they've tranquilized the wolverine. So it takes about, once you inject them, it takes maybe 5 to 10 minutes for them to go to sleep. As soon as they go to sleep, you get them out. You lay down a mat. You can see all the various tools down here that the biologists are using. So what do you do with the wolverine? You weigh them, you sex them, you take hair samples, you take pictures of their chest, because that's where they have the markings, so you can tell who it is if you capture them again. And all of this has to be done really fast. Now these guys, there's like 5 or 6 of them working on this wolverine. I used to do this by myself, not on wolverines, but on pine martens. But you see all the tools down here they have for measuring this caliper, for measuring teeth, all kinds of fun stuff that you have to do before it wakes up. And you have to do it in the worst weather, in the middle of the winter. Here they have a blanket over the wolverine. You don't want him to get cold.
Do they have a hat over his snout?
What?
Do they have a hat on his snout?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they have a hat. You know, we put teardrops in their eyes to keep their eyes moist. Once you get them radio collared, you put them back in the trap, and then let me show you a video. This is a video. Watch up here. This is a wolverine waking up after he's been radio collared, and he wakes up and he decides, I'm getting the heck out of here. There's no audio.
So obviously there was somebody standing there taking that video, and they weren't worried that the wolverine was going to attack them or anything.
No, but if it was me, I'd be way back. Because they weren't worried.
How fast can a wolverine run?
Oh, good question. Pretty fast. I mean, I don't think you can outrun them. If you're going to try to outrun them, I don't think that'll ever happen. I'm not sure how fast. Pretty darn quick. So, I'm going to show you pictures of the actual wolverines that were captured around here, and I'll show you the Holden wolverine. and her name is Sasha. So they named, remember, they named the wolverines that they captured. So you can see the distinctive markings on their chest. And by the way, pine martens have the same thing. That's how you identify.
Bless you.
Pine martens have distinctive markings on their chest. These are all different. So this is Rocky, Rocky the male. This is Xena, a female. This is Mallory. This is a map of the wolverines that they've captured on this study, and this is Sasha, who comes to hold. This is your wolverine. And I'll show you pictures of her. But you can see this is a female. The black outline is a male, so this is probably the father of Sasha's young. The red's a female. The blue's a female. And look how far Sasha went and travels. I think that's really cool.
Does she cross over the lake?
No, she goes around the lake.
Okay.
Does she swim across it?
No. Because it looks like it. Okay, but that's just her. Okay.
No,
gotcha.
So inside this area is where I'm not showing
all the
it,
but different places.
Different locations. So they may have found her here or here. You know, I mean, I don't think she swam the lake, but I could be. It's possible. It's possible that she did go across. So this is Sasha. This is your wolverine. That's, and by the way, I'll explain all this in a minute. And this is Sasha again.
Is she still alive?
That's a good question. That's why. Who asked that? I don't know. Because this particular study ended. And those radio collars either fell off or they were removed. But that's why I think everyone here at Holden should set up a station this winter. These are just locations of the black dots are a male, the red dots are a female. This is the natal den where the female gave birth to her young. The blue, a blue female, this is her natal den. And you can see the male was probably the father of both of them. This is a den site location in the summer, just to show you what it's like. In the spring, this is the den site opening here. And this is what the snow was covering. So imagine the snow level way up here, and underneath, this is where the wolverines spend the winter and gave birth. Another den site. Again, imagine the snow up here. It's 10 feet deep. Underneath the snow, this is where the wolverine, the natal den site. This is just some... this is the wolverine study. And these are sites where other wolverines... So currently, in Washington State, we don't know how many wolverines there are in Washington. We don't know where they're at. So there's a kind of an independent freelance study going on where two of my friends, they're a married couple, they volunteered to go set up a wolverine study site. And they're just, they're not scientists, they're just interested in wolverines. And so I encourage you to do that here. Go out on your own. And I'll show you how, this is just some of the goals of trying to monitor wolverines. So how do you monitor for wolverines? After the study used radio collars, they decided to go to these things, these hair snagging stations. to try to find more wolverines. And these hair snag camera stations, they have a remote camera that'll take a picture. And this is how you tell individual wolverines. Every one of these is an individual, and it's all done by the marking on their chest. So this is what I encourage you to do at Holden, and I can set you up so you can get all the information and send you, I encourage you to set one of these up. And I think we can even send you a remote camera. So this is called a run pole station. What you do is you kind of find just a couple pieces of wood, hammer them into a tree, put a cross piece here. You hang this giant piece of bait, you know, an old deer or something, and then you set your camera over here. The wolverine smells the bait, he comes walking along, he goes up here, he goes out on the run pole, he goes to the end of the pole, and because the bait is out of reach, he's gonna stand up like this, and when he does, that camera is taking a picture of his chest. And now, you can go and see, like if you can go, you guys can find out if Sasha is still alive, because you can compare your chest photo with the ones that I have, and we can find out if Sasha's still around. And then I will also show you that you can set up on this pole what are called hair snags, and it's just two pieces of wood, and they have little, these little bristles that are used for cleaning guns, and you put these bristles, and when the wolverine walks by, his hair brushes up, and now you've got hair samples. And I'll show you some of that. So this is what happens. The wolverine goes on the pole, and he looks up to the bay, he or she, and you get this picture. So you can monitor wolverines without having to radio call them and trap them. And this is unique because guess what? Look at this. There are no markings on this wolverine. Sometimes they don't like the picture taken. When the camera goes off, they're like, what? Pissed off. So here's another cool thing is if you set up one of these stations, guess what? You're not going to get just wolverines. So these are wolverine run pole stations, and I'll show you the next four or five slides. You're going to get more than wolverines. This is a black bear. This I think is a bobcat. I don't see ear tufts on there, and it's white underneath the tail. So I'm thinking this is a bobcat. If it was a lynx, there'd be bigger ear tufts, and that tail, the tent end of the tail would be all black. Mm-hmm. Look at this. Look at those little guys. They're little big bear cubs. And get them out real. So here's the hair snags. That anything that brushes up against that is gonna take hair off of it.
If more than one thing brushes, can you figure out the different kinds of hair?
Well, we can't, but the researchers want those hairs so they can do genetic testing on them. So I wouldn't be able to tell I guess if I really did some serious research and studied how to tell the difference in hair. Right now I couldn't tell you, if there was hair on there, I couldn't tell if it was a wolverine, a bear, or a marten. But you see what happens, for that wolverine to get to the end of the pole, he's gonna have to go through that fence and leave hair, he'll leave hair on the... I'm getting near the end. One interesting thing is the federal government in its very poor wisdom, is refusing to list the wolverine as a threatened and endangered species. There are some opposition groups in Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho that do not want the wolverine listed as threatened or endangered because it's going to affect their pocketbook. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not happy to see that what should be a biological, factual decision based on the biology of the wolverine, whether it's threatened or endangered, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is being pressured to make a decision based on pocketbook and money and so-called recreational activities. So they have not agreed. There was a time that it almost was going to be listed as a threatened and endangered species, but the U.S. Fish and Wildlife in 2014 backed out and decided it wouldn't do it. Oh, and here's a, you know, climate change is going to affect the wolverine. It's a species that relies on snow cover and cold temperatures. So if there is a species that's going to, if you had to pick a species that's going to be affected by climate change, the wolverine would certainly be one. Climate change is bad for business. I'm kind of going backwards here, but these are the reasons that we don't have wolverines in the Sierras any longer. Trapping, poison baits that were used for coyotes and wolves, and you know, because wolverines were are scavengers, if you put out a carcass that's poisoned, the wolverines are going to find it and then they'll die. Even though what you're actually trying to kill is maybe a coyote, you end up killing everything else also. These are bison skulls. And there's thousands of them there, but these bison were killed and those skulls were ground down to make fertilizer. So what can you do if you care about the wolverines? you can learn about their biology, read up on them. As far as, you know, here in Holden, volunteering to do some wildlife research for some of these organizations, they would love for someone here in Holden to say, yeah, you know, we can do some monitoring up here. Become an advocate. You know, speak up when land managers are trying to decide what to do. As far as, you know, here in Holden, you know, read the paper, find out what the local Forest Service is doing. A good source of wolverine information is this group, the Wolverine Foundation, has a lot of really cool information on wolverines. And that's the end of my story, or that's the end of my lecture. Thank you. So, do you have any questions? Yeah.
Tell us your pine marten story.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did 2 years of research on pine martens. So, pine martens are part of the weasel family and wolverines. And by the way, these guys are tough. So you don't really want to mess with them. They have sharp teeth, sharp claws. So I was running a, we have a, we had a trap line, you know, where we would live capture martens. And one day I was working by myself, I'm driving up the road, and I'm on a logging road, and the logging roads only have room for one car. Well, they were logging, I had a trap line on a road where they were logging further up. So there were logging trucks coming down the road as I'm driving up, and I would stop on this road to check the traps, which were just, you know, 10 feet off the road. So on this particular day, I'm driving up the road, I stop, I hop out, and I run down to check one of my traps, and I have a marten in there. But so normally, if they weren't logging, I would take the trap, bring it up to the road, and I would process the marten right there on the road, because there's nobody else out. I'm in the middle of nowhere. But they're logging, and I have to get off the road. I can't take the 20 minutes or half hour to process the pine marten. So I grab the trap, which is about this big, you know, it's about this big. I grab the trap, I open up the back doors of my Suburban, I set the trap in the back, close the doors, get into my front seat, and I start driving down the road, because I know that there's a spur road going off the main road up ahead. So I put the pine marten in the back, I'm driving down the road, and I'm going a little faster, because any minute now, you know, a logging truck's going to come, and I need to get to this spur road. And then, you know, and I'm going a little bit faster, and the car's bouncing around, and I'm going too fast, and I'm bouncing around, and I thought to myself, I'd be in really big trouble if somehow this marten gets out of that trap. But if you know these traps, though, so there's a door, and it's spring-fed, so it snaps shut, and in my mind, I'm thinking, there's no way the marten can get out once the door is shut. So I wasn't really worried, but in the back of my mind, it was one of those things, I don't know if this is a good idea. So by this time, I'm going way too fast. I know there's a logging truck coming, and I'm going too fast, and I'm bouncing around, and then I hear a loud, I hit one bump, and I hear this loud crash, boom, bang, in the back. I mean, loud. And I'm thinking, no, it can't, don't let the marten get out of there. And I'm driving along, and I'm looking. So I got one eye on the front where I'm going, one eye looking for the spur road, and then I glance in my rearview mirror, and here's a pine marten walking along the back seat on top, on, you know, where your head is. There's the pine marten. He got out of the trap. And I am like, oh no. So now I'm driving fast, I'm looking for a logging truck, I'm looking for the spur road, and I've got a pine marten that just disappeared out of my rear. So it went down somewhere. And I'm driving along, and I don't know where the pine marten is. I know he's pissed. I'm the only thing that's really moving in there. And so now I'm driving, looking for logging trucks, looking for the spur road, looking for the marten, and now I'm looking down at my feet, because any minute I think he's going to come out under. So I'm driving along. Sure enough, he goes underneath the back seat, underneath the drive. He pops out on the passenger side on the floorboard, hops up on the dashboard, and he hops up on the dashboard. I'm driving here, so then the pine marten's there, and he looks at me, and I look at him. And I don't know what to do. I'm like, I have to get out of the car, because the pine marten's going to jump on me and basically rip me to shreds. So he jumps down again and disappears. And so I don't know where he's at. And I get to the spur road, and I pull off on the spur road, hit the brakes, turn the car off, open my door, jump out, and slam the door shut. So I got out, but I'm standing outside the car. I have none of my all my trapping. I have nothing to catch the pine marten with. I'm like, what do I do? And so when you work for the Forest Service, everybody's issued radios, and especially if you're working by yourself. So these radios. So I jumped out And I left my radio right next to where I, right where my hip, where I'm driving, the radio was all, the walkie-talkie was right there. So I, without thinking, I jumped out of the car and closed the door. Like an idiot, I should have grabbed the radio. So I have a radio, and so I waited till the Pine Martin went to the back. I could see, he's moving on. I reached in, grabbed the radio, closed the door. Because I'm working with a partner, but he's on another trap line. And I need to get him over to where I'm at so we can set a trap for the Martin. And so I get on the radio. Now the problem is, these Forest Service radios go to what's called a repeater on the nearest highest mountain. And when you talk on the radio and it goes to the repeater, guess who can hear you? The entire force, like everybody that works for the Forest Service can hear anything that you say. And so I'm standing there. I don't want to get on the radio and go, "Hey, Jim, it's Gus. I have a Pine Martin that got out and it's running around in my car and I'm standing outside my car like an idiot." I don't know what to say. So I get on the radio and I go, "Jim," who's the guy I was working with, and I said, "Jim, I need some help." And he answers back, "What do you need?" And I'm like, "Well, Jim, you know, can you just come over to the drainage?" He was on the next drainage. I said, "Can you just come over to whatever drainage?" And he answers back, "What's going on?" And I'm like, "Jim, just come on over." And he gets back on the rail. He goes, "Well, what do you need me for?" He's trying to find out what, and I'm like, "Jim, come over, please. I'll tell you when you get here." And he gets back on the radio. He's like, "Well, what's going on? Did you have a wreck? You have a flat tire?" And I don't want to get on the radio saying, "I'm the stupid biologist for the wild pine marten." Anyway, so I tell Jim to get his butt over to where I'm at. So, and it's going to take him 20 minutes, half hour. So now I'm standing outside the car and I'm thinking, what do I do? So what would you do? One of my thoughts, which was the totally wrong thing to do, so I had, because it was fall, I had a big jacket sitting on my, next to where I was sitting, and one of my very stupid ideas, which I didn't do, was I'll reach in, grab my jacket, and then I'll go to the back door, and when the Martin comes near the door, I'll open it up, throw my jacket on the Martin, and capture it. No, I thought about that briefly. So anyways, while I was waiting with Jim, I thought, okay, the only thing, there's no way this is going to work. I thought, well, when the Martin's running around on the dashboard, I'll go back and reset the trap. So that's why I waited until he was on the front dashboard. I went back to open up the back door, and I reset the trap, and I closed the door. 2 seconds later, he went back into the trap and snapped, and I caught him.
Oh my gosh.
2 seconds, he went right back in the trap like that. And that was the end of my, that's the end of my story. Wow! Yeah?
So I had a question about the resistance to listing as endangered. What is the issue having to do with people not wanting that to happen?
So the issue is, and one of the big issues, is that because the wolverine needs snow cover and deep snow, everybody that snowmobiles in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming don't want an area closed to their recreational activity to protect the wolverine. They don't. Current snowmobiles can go, they're strong and fast, they can go way back into the backcountry, and they go to areas that no one else can get to, and this is, it's wolverine habitat, and the snow machines greatly affect the wolverine's denning and disturbance. So there's the strongest pressure is from the snowmobile community speaking to their congressmen and senators saying, "Hey, you're gonna close our..." And then they also argue that, so when they go to a town like McCall, Idaho, which is a big snowmobile area, they're they're, you know, they're buying food, gas, and staying in hotels, which boosts the economy of the local small town. But yeah, snowmobilers are very much against any listing of the. All right. Thank you. I'll see you. Thank you.